I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Bit of background, folks, fellow conspiracy realists. We are recording live-ish in our office today on a beautifully British Friday morning.
Yeah, man, we're in the studio. This thing has under lighting. What?
Yeah, the weather outside matches the tone of Ben's computer, which is space gray, which is also appropriate for today's episode.
Wait, aren't all of our computers gray?
Mine is not officially space gray. Space gray is a colorway patented by Apple. I think, Matt, you also have space gray.
Apple.
All the new ones that
were
available. Mine
is old school silver. Those are space gray.
Okay, so the new ones are like Ford Model Ts, any color you want as long as it's black?
Basically.
I think
there were three others. There was like a rose one.
Oh,
and
that's
then
right.
There was like one
it's like
other
a,
one.
It looks almost like bone.
It does look a bit like bone.
They're
it's very
all,
Apple.
They're all gray to me. Oh my
dude,
God.
I went to an Apple store at a mall the other day. That it looks like you're walking into a hospital. It's just very clinical. There's something about it that's a little sterile.
Because stuff keeps breaking when I'm on the road, I've been in Apple stores in other countries. And again, I say it's uniformly
the
same.
Exactly. That's like, how they like it.
Yeah. And we're talking today about looking at things closely. It's very easy to take things for normal and kind of sort of put blinders on, right? That's just part of being a human. But when is the last time you really gazed up at the night sky?
Last night?
About a week ago. I just remember walking home. It was nighttime, looking up in my neck of the woods and seeing constellations and being kind of impressed by my, you know, relative close proximity to a giant city, how well I could see said constellations.
Yeah.
Daddy lives a little bit more out in the country
of the docks. Yeah. I looked up, took my dogs outside, and there she was, the Big Dipper, like right, like I guess where the trees are. I looked up in the clearing of the trees, and the Big Dipper filled out the entirety of that thing, and my brain just said, this is nice.
Beautiful.
I've got a
rooftop situation now where I'm currently living, and as a thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent type dude, I love having a bootleg planetarium at home.
Yeah.
So instead of going out and spending money pretty often, now I will just go up to this place and hang out. And like most people in the world, folks, we live in or on the edge of a huge conurbation, a lot of urban density. And I love the point you're making about lights, because
a conurbation is just our fancy way of saying you live around a lot of light pollution, a lot of noise pollution. Yeah. So even when we look up and try very hard to see what's going on, it can be difficult to see all the strange things in orbit. And make no mistake, there is a lot up there, especially mm-hmm. close to Earth. Here are the facts.
Spy satellites, guys. Mm-hmm. You know them. You love them. They keep you up at night. There's been songs written about them. At the very least, satellites. We've got the Dave Matthews Band. We've got the Counting Crows album. What's it called? Something the satellites? What are they doing to the satellites?
Chasing the satellites?
It's not chasing. They're not chasing them. They're discovering them.
Boinking.
Touching. Caressing them. Ah, we're getting close. Gosh, I've got to find out.
Harassing the satellites?
That's not cool.
I didn't say it was cool. I said that might be what they named it.
It's called, hold on. Oh, gosh. I just have to know.
Because there's August and everything after.
That's right.
That's a memorable title.
It is.
Welcome back to This Is Important, where we only talk about the absolutely most important, vital...
Recovering. I said discovering. Okay. We had to put that to bed, Matt. We can't just let that hang.
Is that a Corona reference?
Well, it could be. We'd have to ask Adam Duritz. But it's true that spy satellites are a real thing. And they're kind of a conundrum, right? In the world of conspiracy. Because they're definitely real. They do amazing sci-fi level stuff, but they're also definitely not as secret as their creators would hope, because as we've discussed in the past, you can't hide the fact that they're being launched. You usually can't. There's one case we'll talk about that's very interesting. You can't make these things invisible. Amateur sky watchers with just prosumer telescopes will be able to spot objects in the sky, and there are huge communities online that just track these things. Because there are so many in the sky right now, it might surprise people. I don't know. It's on the edge of where we could say this is a recent phenomenon or it's a surprisingly old phenomenon, because it dates back to like the 1950s. It's when the U.S. first started saying, hey, let's elevate our spy game.
Yeah.
Literally elevate. I'm doing atmosphere jokes.
Well, also spy games are a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that a film?
Yeah. Yes, I think something like that. But it does make sense because it goes back to rockets, right?
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to Operation Paperclip. It goes back to being able to actually keep something stable in often a geosynchronous orbit, right? Which is like 22,000 miles above planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 22,300, something like that.
Stable in terms of connection to Earth, or just in terms of it not
in a
like
stable orbit.
There
like
you
it,
go.
It mm-hmm. won't decay as quickly. Even more importantly, that you can predict where it will
right,
be,
where it will
given
be at any given time.
Exactly, which means you can communicate with it, which brings along communication satellites, all the things that we take for granted these days in our modern technology. It's because we can talk to something in the sky.
And if you don't care, if you're like, I'm a surface dweller, why does a satellite matter to me? I'm not a billionaire guy interested in space. I don't work at NASA or the NRO. It matters because these satellites make the actual world as you know it possible. If these things are gone, if they're all damaged in some sort of disastrous scenario, it's back to the Dark Ages very, very quickly.
Can we just talk about, like every other technology, satellites are a thing because of war or potential war
100%.
Or military, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And is it true the first ones were recon? Like, the first satellites ever up there?
The very first satellite is Sputnik.
Well, of course.
Right, and that was...
we can do this.
That was successful because it got there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it didn't stay there long. Yeah, the first satellites that we would consider like in a stable orbit were reconnaissance things, and they started because the U.S. panicked. Mm-hmm. Sputnik launched... in 1955, the U.S. Air Force said, we got to make satellites. They're going to be reconnaissance satellites because we have to figure out what's going on with any potential enemy. And they didn't name this potential enemy, but it was 1955.
Yeah, exactly. So my question is, what does a reconnaissance satellite in 1955 do exactly?
Well, that's the thing, right? Look at your enemy's positioning, because you're so high up, you can actually see their territory from a God's eye angle, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can actually see if there's a factory, what's coming out of that factory if your enemy isn't like concealing
that. It's literal satellite photography in 1955.
They get there. That's the idea, because they didn't have, you know, the technology to electronically send good visuals. After Sputnik launches in October 1957, the U.S. absolutely panics. And they panic for good reason. They take this project that had been kind of cooking on the back burner called the Corona Program, and they put all the gas of Uncle Sam's military might behind it. The first satellites were called Keyhole series, and they were amazing at the time, but if you're into satellites today, you look back at them, they're mids, dude. They used physical film cameras, and they had no way to get the film back to Earth.
Right.
So they had to airdrop it and be like, I hope this shows up not in Russian territory.
And not burnt up because there was a flaw in the capsule.
Or the pictures didn't turn out.
Yeah. Blurred, we also hope the pictures are good.
Yeah. Like, they would have to develop them, literally, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Like the many of us in the crowd are old enough to remember that sort of waiting game you had to play, right? Where you had a camera, a roll of film, or maybe even disposable cameras, and you would take pictures and hope it looked good. You would drop it off at your, I guess the old school ones, the photo mat or your local drugstore. And then, you know, you would just spend a few days saying, I hope it looked as good as they felt.
Yeah. The viewfinder hopefully didn't lie.
The viewfinder hopefully didn't lie. And that's the game Corona was playing too. Still, the idea was always, this is better than nothing. That's been the impetus of all spy satellites today. You might be surprised to find that spy satellites are totally legal. There's the UN is like, we can't stop it. Like, the UN is like the cool parents who let the high schooler kids drink booze at home.
Yeah. As long as you do it under our watch, under our roof.
As long as
and
we
by
know.
Our roof, I mean, yeah. You know, space.
I'm trying to understand how you could police something like that. Right? I mean, if you're going to allow a country to launch a satellite,
right?
You would have to inspect each satellite.
Never
going like,
to happen.
Are there optics on this thing? Well, you know,
we talked about that recently in terms of nuclear proliferation, for example, mm-hmm. like the logistics of, you know, how difficult it is to police that stuff and to do these inspections and how people can hide and obfuscate those kinds of inspections. Mm-hmm. What was it in relation to? We did it was sort of an analogy. It was a recent episode we were talking about.
Monitors nuclear.
It was about Antarctica. It was about like research stations for military purposes in Antarctica and how there's no governing body that could reasonably, logistically, you know, pull that off.
Yeah.
I think this is a similar situation. But I guess because the playing field's equal, because it's space. If you can get there, go with God, literally, right?
That's kind of the best security measure against shenanigans in space. The barrier to enter space 100%. Is... literally so high.
It's very high.
I'm going to keep doing these.
22,000 miles.
Yes, change. Okay, so wait, you're saying, is outer space just some Wild West sci-fi Mad Max situation? Kind of, not really. Since 1967, all of the major space powers have agreed, at least lip service, to something called the Outer Space Treaty. Its technical name is the Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space, comma, including the Moon and Other Celestial Bodies.
Is there a sexy acronym for that or no?
Outer Space Treaty.
Okay, yeah. David Lynch.
It was right, Garmin Posey or whatever.
Yeah.
But this whole agreement is a direct result of the fear the world felt of the U.S. and USSR arms race. Nations of Earth were rightly worried that if they didn't get in front of this, space would become the new battleground for all sorts of nasty things. And it happened because the reason people got scared enough to put aside their differences and sign up is because of intercontinental ballistic missiles, which could just smack you from the other side of the world, leveraging outer space. And at the time these things were invented, no one could stop them.
Yeah. And they do go into space.
They do.
That is like the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you launch one of those, it goes way up, travels real quick and then gets down to its intended target. If, you know, the targeting system works, because as we talked about recently in our Strange News episode, sometimes that doesn't work and it goes way off target.
The best way to stop an ICBM is to stop it from launching in the first place, hell or high water, which gets really, I'll say, spoopy really quickly.
Well, yeah. And when there's also a fear in this time, in the 1950s and 60s, that you could have a nuclear weapon up in space somewhere and your enemies wouldn't know about it. And then you could launch it at any time. And everybody is thinking that that's a possibility, which is really creepy, because it feels like everybody might be trying to develop it before their opponents do.
Yeah, like Khrushchev wakes up on the wrong side of the bed one day and says, you know what? I think California sucks. And then there's no way to stop it.
Well, yeah. But even I think just that mindset of it's better to have it in place than not have it in place, just in case we need it.
And California doesn't suck. We're big fans. I think it's safe to say we're big fans of most states, right? In general?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right. There was a pause.
I was thinking about a couple places, okay, but I'm not going to say.
All right. All right. We'll be diplomatic. And speaking of diplomacy, maybe we talk just real briefly about what this treaty in 1963, what it actually did, why it matters today. Because there are a couple of important things it bans explicitly, but then there are a couple of loopholes.
Correct. These key provisions include limiting the use of the moon and all other celestial bodies to peaceful purposes.
Sure.
That tracks. The moon seems like a peaceful place. The word celestial invokes feelings of serenity and peace, I would say.
Sure.
Surely we can stick to this, guys. We can all agree to keep things, you know, copacetic in space, right?
Oh, sure.
Pursuit of happiness.
But
the pursuit.
In the pursuit of peace, we may need a security force to, you know, make sure.
The peace police.
Love it. Trust but verify security, or peace through security, whatever it was they say in V for Vendetta. Yeah.
Hey, guys, after all, aren't all wars just a means to peace at the end of the day?
I think it's still pretty screwy that we call things the Department of Defense. You know what I mean? Like, how aggressive is defense before you're over the line of what that word describes?
We got to call it the Department of Smash. You know?
Yeah.
We've also got the idea establishing space as a freely explored and usable space by all nations.
Yeah,
so long as they can afford it.
Well, to your point earlier, Ben, the barrier to entry in and of itself is its own safeguard against, well, not necessarily bad actors, but at least against actors that we are not aware of. Because if you're not in the game, chances are you don't have the toys that it's going to take to get there.
It is a shared domain, right?
Sure.
Because, and it reminds me of the way, I guess, the Earth's governing bodies have decided to look at international waters, right? And oceans, kind of that same deal. Like, if it's not in your official territory, then it's everybody's. But it doesn't make sense to me, because humans control airspace like very closely, right?
Yes. Yeah,
they also control territories of water, you know, certain distance outside of their official land territory. It does feel like you would go all the way up, basically, at some point. They're like, oh, this is Canadian space. Don't come in here unless we allow you to.
And then that becomes tricky, because you can think of, like, if you think of orbits as a series of concentric spheres, they're not always geosynchronous.
Yeah.
So the space over Canada at one point may not be the same space the next point.
We've done this before in another episode. Yeah. I don't think we talked about this episode. Geosynchronous.
Yeah. Right.
Those words.
Yes. I would love a little clarification.
Well, it's synchronized with Earth
the rotation.
Turning, right? With Earth rotating. Yeah. So when you put one of those up there, it's in the same place relative to the ground.
It's got a fixed latitude. But not, or no, it's got fixed longitude, but
yes,
not fixed latitude.
That's it.
So yeah, this is, and there's an art to making that. Also, the Outer Space Treaty says, and just in case anybody gets squirrely, you can't land on stuff in space and say it belongs to you.
Yeah.
So you can't, like, okay, everybody have your little race to the moon, but it's not yours just because you had a flag. We know they knew about Terra Nullius.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But again, you know, with all the conversations we've had about Terra Nullius and all of the, you know, the domineering behaviors of invading forces over time, it really all comes down to your ability to defend your decision, you know, militarily speaking. Mm. Like, if it gets to a point where someone decides they're going to claim something in space and they have the guns or the space weapons to you know, put their money where their mouth is, who's to stop them?
And that's where we get to the loopholes of the treaty, which are mission critical for our exploration. The treaty does not ban several things. It does not ban spying or reconnaissance. First, how would they, to the earlier point? And secondly, everybody kind of low-key agreed that they were going to sneak that stuff up there anyway. It doesn't ban anything that vaguely qualifies as research. And research is a huge umbrella of a term. It also, surprisingly, does not ban all military activities. You can still make a space force. Several countries have. You can still put what they call conventional weapons in space. Mm-hmm. So just no nukes.
9mm?
Space cannon type things.
You know,
right?
Like a nice, like a glaive. Yeah, like a morning star.
A morning star, perhaps. Right. Yes, a battle axe.
Yeah, yeah, if you need it. If you needed your battle axe, your juggalo hatchet.
Wouldn't that be fun, if the rules were, hey, violence in space is fine, but we can only use hand-to-hand weapons. Yeah.
Great. And it's paradoxical, though, that things that are so easily visible in the sky are the subject of such conspiracy and secrecy. Still, well before the recent news about Russia broke, it was obvious to everyone there's a new space race afoot. As of 2020, which is now 4 years ago, 1/5 of all the satellites up there belong to our military satellites, and they are used for spying. So imagine satellites as the population of a country, and 1/5 of the people living there work for a spy agency.
Dude.
That's a good way to think about it.
I like that.
And
I
mean, like,
I don't know if I like that, but I like the analogy.
Well, like 3/5 of them are Starlink satellites. Like, seriously, they've launched so many in the, what, past decade or less?
Yeah, pretty recently. And we're going to see that this trend continues. Satellites proliferate because there's economy of scale. There's greater interest on the part of, frankly, billionaires, but then also state powers. And they're able to make smaller satellites that are much less expensive. So as a result, there are more satellites and there are more stories of strange satellites than ever before. Want to take a break for a word from our sponsor while this shoots across space?
Let's do it.
Satellite.
Oh, guys, the AT&T network is out again.
Ah, crapola.
All right, give it a second. There it is. Okay.
Just hit it a couple of times.
All right, come back. Break.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's where it gets crazy. All right, so for your average, like, warmongering nation, not naming names, things get tricky when you get weapons in space, because we said the space treaty bans militarization, but there's this massive gray area of definition between what's considered reconnaissance, like I'm just looking, or research, and just trying something, versus weaponization. I'm looking at ways to kill you, or I'm trying to see if there are new ways to kill you.
Don't look up here.
Oh, you keep your eyes on the ground, amateur Skywalkers, or Skywatchers. We'll keep Skywalkers. So what we can say is that the majority of spy satellites, though they're shrouded in operational secrecy, and it can be tough to know specifically what they're doing, we do know their genres. They're like five general categories of spy satellites that we know about.
Yeah, and they're usually checking out, they're looking for signals,
mm-hmm.
right, of what could be happening on the ground, and or checking out what those signals might mean, right?
Yeah.
And they work together often. Mm-hmm. So it's not like one of these we're going to describe is just working independently. There's usually a system of satellites mm-hmm. that goes, okay, we can give you this info from this one, we can mm-hmm. give you this data from the other one, and with this one, we can see it.
As long as our agencies currently agree. Because yeah, they have turf wars say. All the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And the Navy's like, nah, that's our thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's like Dungeons & Dragons multi-classing. One single satellite can have multiple capabilities, especially the newer ones.
Are there shared satellites?
Yes.
Like there are space stations and things like that?
Yeah, there are satellites that are launched as a cooperative measure between a couple of different countries.
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
Especially given how expensive they are. And then there are ones where one country might foot more of the budget. One country might have a specialized component, or they might operate it jointly.
Yeah.
And last thing, I know we hear sometimes about decommissioned satellites just kind of floating around in space forever
yeah.
and adding to the debris belt, you know, yes. out there. What is the typical life of a satellite? Is it more about the tech or its inability to be updated or upgraded?
Yeah, it's about the tech, the design of the thing, and sometimes the flaws in construction. Yeah.
Often is amount of fuel on board to yeah. be able to boost every so often at an interval mm-hmm. to maintain that
orbit.
And is it a dummy satellite or can it reposition itself?
Yes. And as we talked about in Strange News recently, once a satellite has lost all its fuel or its ability to boost again, it kind of slowly starts to enter the Earth's atmosphere, which could take years.
That's right.
Yeah. It's like, do you want, and people bake this in, like, do you want your satellite to last 10 to 15 years? Sometimes you might say, I don't want it to last that long because I predict that the technology will improve such that this will no longer be relevant.
So it's not exactly planned obsolescence, but it's planning for obsolescence.
It gets close, yeah. And that's a good distinction. So when we're talking
about just that ERS-1 satellite,
yeah.
it's going to take 100 years for it to enter Earth's atmosphere, mm-hmm. and it's dead. Nobody can communicate with it. It's not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. But we can see what it's doing, though. We can track it over that 100 years to make sure that it's not going to go boom. You know?
It's a rusting dead car in the front yard of Earth.
Yes. You can do nothing to it. So if there is debris or anything that impacts it, there's no way to prevent that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's scary.
And it doesn't
when
work.
Dead.
It's basically this this Pontiac is on cinder blocks.
And we also know the space is just absolutely lousy with garbage.
Right.
And there, much like, I guess, there's no singular agency to police what people do with space, likewise, there isn't one to keep us from ruining space.
There are institutions that have been waving the flag for years, and they're trying to talk sense into people, but humans listening to scientists, not the best track record, to be honest. I mean, they do. I think the world powers, though, do recognize the efficacy of these things. Like going back to those types of spy satellites, you've got things that will just watch for missiles. That's the old school stuff. And then you've got stuff that will just take pictures, literal pictures of Earth from the top of the sky, survey level, and then the very scary close look telephoto stuff where you think, oh, wow, can they really see, as dilated people said, the face of a dime from a satellite? That technology is
on the way.
Frightening. And yeah,
well, it's been here for a lot longer than we would ever imagine
or publicly admit.
Because I was going to ask, too, I mean, you know, like many things, this stuff, this tech starts in the military sector and then trickles its way down to the public or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we obviously have entertainment companies that have satellites out in space as well.
Right.
But that's piggybacked on the discoveries and innovations of the military.
Yes. Yeah. And when we say also not just entertainment companies, but telecoms.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Exactly.
Definitely.
Broadcasting.
And then, of course, nuclear explosion detectors. Their entire job is to clock stuff like the Vela incident, and they're pretty good with it.
And that is signals intelligence, right? That's more like you detect the wave, basically, of energy that occurs when a nuclear explosion happens. And the people who created the satellite and the systems understand exactly what that looks like when you get a pulse.
Yeah. And then that's also related, right, to the radar imaging, which the Russians pioneered.
Yes.
Which is seen through cloud cover, seen at night. And then SIGINT, though, to be honest, like, to your point, Matt, SIGINT's the big one. Sneaking through and maybe not interrupting, but eavesdropping on radio waves and other forms of communication. The problem is that the ability to eavesdrop gets you really closely to the ability to intercept, impersonate, to interrupt. And those are the things that keep people up at night. I mean, there's so much hidden history here. We shouted this out. Oh, I forgot to write that email back. But someone was talking with us about this. And we get letters about nukes in space pretty often, especially now. A lot of us aren't aware of something called Starfish Prime, which is such a cool nickname.
It also sounds like a really fancy starfish steak.
There we go. Yeah. Or the name of a new Guardians of the Galaxy character.
Or a Transformer, perhaps.
Star-Lord, Starfish Prime. Yeah, Transformer. So right before the Outer Space Treaty happens, all the big powers know it's on the way. And this is a true story. Somewhere in the Doctor Strange Love halls of power in the U.S., someone was like, well, guys, if we want to blow up some nukes in space, we got to hop to it now while it's still okay.
Yeah, and a nuke in space feels like kind of a weird idea.
It feels so American, though.
Well, because you're, okay, just correct me, I don't understand the science fully, but if you launch a nuclear missile well above Earth's orbit, that you're outside of the atmosphere completely.
Wouldn't it like be an implosion or something? Like, how would
I don't know. It feels
in
like
that kind of low gravity.
You don't have molecules that are existing inside do anything. But if you do a high altitude explosion like this, then you can see, well, what actually happens on the surface of the planet above or below that explosion.
Could it have effects on things like could it create a black hole or something? I'm being a ding-dong.
No,
maybe.
No, you're right. And they didn't know. Mm-hmm. They were in an FAFO situation, as we call it. Like they did not anticipate so much stuff. The Aurora Borealis that came out as a result, the massive EMP, this was a weapon, and it blacked out radio communication. It wasn't a purposeful weapon, though. They wanted to see what happened, and I know it sounds like something from Mr. Show sketch, like the one where they decided to blow up the moon.
Why not?
Why not?
It's there.
Right.
Look at it. It's leering there.
Exactly.
I think it's so big.
Yeah, because it's the first satellite. Whatever. It did this Starfish thing in Operation Fishbowl, of which it was a part. They did provide a lot of data that would become of increasing importance as space exploration became more and more of a reality. But it was just like Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer's team, I should say, detonating the first bomb. People didn't know. They didn't know what was going to happen. But it did teach people what to look for if nukes detonate up there in the future. So I don't know. That's like...
So there, yeah. There are questions around what the physical conditions of space would do to the behavior of a nuke.
Yes, and they were answered. The best answer right now in the real world was Starfish Prime.
I see.
There are a lot of extensive like simulations and models that are probably cleaving pretty closely to the truth. But that crazy thing, classic US, that crazy thing actually informs some of the better decisions that are being made today. But the problem is, everybody wants a spy satellite now. It's hotter than Pogs in the 90s or Beanie Babies, but everybody knows when you launch one. The streets are watching, and they're watching more and more closely with every satellite that launches. So you can obscure the abilities of your satellite. You can classify the specifics of its mission, but everybody's going to know when a launch occurs. And that's where we get to maybe some weird examples of satellite conspiracies. What do you say? Should we start like plausible and then go to the further end of the spectrum?
Sure.
All right. Cool name. Honorary coolest name, I think. Up there with Starfish Prime, Palladium at Night.
What do you think Palladium gets into?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Palladium at Night launches in September 2009. We're not sure what it gets up to because out of all the different spy satellites, you know, the U.S. will usually confirm which agency is in charge of it. Is it the NRO, like most of them, NSA, et cetera, the Navy, or Space Force? To this day, the U.S. has never said who runs Palladium at Night. If you want to learn more about it, you can call. It's called USA 207.
Palladium After Dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is from... like 2008, 2009?
Nine, yeah.
Okay. So that's a little while back from now, but that's still well advanced into the satellite programs that existed and the technology. It does, did we already talk about how the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office, runs a lot of the satellites?
Off air, I think. I can't remember if it made it in, but yeah, National Reconnaissance Office.
So it does feel like that group, that organization that was only declassified, by the way, was in the 90s when the NRO was officially recognized, or they said, yeah, this is a thing.
They were like the U.S. government version of a cryptid.
Yes, exactly. A very secretive organization that only a few people had a need to know basis about even its very existence.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the group that generally controls, and let me say that again, controls the satellites that are in orbit that have a spy functionality, or a let's say a close watch functionality. It seems like Palladium at Night would be controlled by this group, but are there other potential?
Yeah. We got to look up Edward Snowden. Remember him?
Sounds familiar.
He's Russia's golden boy. I'm kidding. That's unfair. He had to take refuge in Russia because the U.S. was out for him after he released this massive treasure trove of classified info. His leaks heavily imply that Palladium at Night, also sometimes called Pick a Name, is run by the NSA. And we don't know exactly what it's doing, whomever does run it, again, never officially confirmed, but during the first 5 years of its launch from 2009, 2014, we're talking about repositioning, it moved around in different types of orbits at least 9 different times, which is a lot. And each time it moved to get closer to a commercial communications satellite. So closer to your AT&T, closer to your telecom. Yeah. Just to sneak in.
Oh,
so,
dude.
Yeah.
That's totally NSA. I mean, that's what we learned about the NSA was doing at like the Long Lines buildings and these other places where they're tapping directly into the phone lines and the internet. Wires and tubes, but they're literally doubling everything that's going through and making a copy of it. So they've got their own stream. They're doing it with the satellites.
They could be, wow. I mean, it could be monitoring for terrorist activity. That probably is true, but that's also a convenient thing to say, right? Just like
NSA is so creepy to me. Y'all are creeps. You hear me? You're over there just like, I have to see.
I must see
what they're doing. Oh my God.
Their street name was No Such Agency.
Bunch of pervy voyeurs is what they are.
That's so gross, y'all. Get a dog.
Right. Get a hobby, you know. Play Baldur's Gate 3. It's Jeez. Awesome. It's awesome, and it's also weirdly horny, if that's what you're interested in. People still, as a result, aren't 100% agreed on what Pan or Palladium at Night is doing up there, but they're guessing it's a dedicated comm satellite for intelligence operations in enemy territory. It could be a relay station or relay center for drone operations, or it could be, and this is what my money's on, it could be a craft designed to spy, not really on Earth, but on other satellites, including friendlies.
I would say you are on the money there, Ben. So. And I think this was like second or third generation of that kind of mission up there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And then that would necessarily mean that because satellite launches have increased, there's a newer model out there.
Oh, there is. Should we talk about that right now? Because I think it's directly related. Yeah. Okay. Look up something if you're around and you have access to the internet. Look up something called Silent Barker or NROL-107. This is, at least according to the NRO itself and the Space Force, which is again a real thing.
It really is. It's not an anime yet.
This is a series of watchdog satellites. That's how they describe them. That monitor potential adversaries, not on the ground, not in the sky, in the atmosphere, not in the oceans. They monitor exactly what's going on in geosynchronous orbit. Mm-hmm. And these are a series of satellites that have been launched. Some of them were launched in September of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And the government is a little open about it.
Yeah. They're because they're sending messages. There's a PSYOP aspect to it.
I think that's exactly what it is. And actually, who's this guy? He's the NRO director, Chris Scalise, I think is how you would say his name. I'm gonna read this quote.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, the idea of the mission is to put a satellite in geosynchronous orbit and then to be looking at that orbital regime, so all of it, and get a sense of what's happening day to day. We also want to know if there's something going on that is unexpected or shouldn't be going on that could potentially represent a threat to a high-value asset, either ours or one of our allies. And guys, we're going to get to it at the end of this, but I think that is directly related to what happened very recently in 2024.
It's all related, I would say. It's all very much related. And also, I love you bringing that quote because I always have to chuckle when I hear the description, like protecting high value assets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that means, and I'm not joking, this is how this sort of stuff works. That means there has been someone who asked for help and was told they were not a high enough value asset and they got burned.
I'm sure there's a more diplomatic way that they deliver the news to these individuals as not to hurt their feelings.
Thank you for your service.
Okay.
Or something.
Here's a gold watch.
Right. Or here's a special compartment in your tooth.
Jeez,
I'm
yes.
kidding. Those days are done.
Bite down.
Yeah. But Silent Barker, they are being more public about it. And because also there's sort of a, the buttoned up secrecy of old is not necessarily as useful as it was, because now the capabilities to suss out what's happening render that kind of skull and bone stuff increasingly irrelevant.
Just the fact that this was launched in September of last year.
Yes.
So like pretty recently, and its mission is to check out what's going on up there. And then we have our recent news about weird stuff going on in in space. Again, I'm just kind of teasing that right now because we're going to really get into that in a moment. But it freaks me out, especially when I think about our discussions of X-37B through Z and whatever else is going on up there with those types of craft and talking about those high value assets and then the capabilities. I do think you could probably connect dots to all of those systems to basically, I think the United States is developing a sort of this Space Force they're talking about.
It's a net.
Exactly.
It's a web. Yeah. There's also like car chase scenes.
I don't think I understand. What? What? A net, a web, what? In what respect?
You know how like Starlink creates a web to allow internet access?
Sure.
So this is a web of surveillance.
It's the first step towards that, I guess.
It's very good steps too. But the car chase thing is, okay, the U.S. military is dispatched. This happened pretty recently too. The U.S. military dispatched satellites to track these two Chinese spacecraft that launched.
Yes.
And just like in a car chase situation, the Chinese operators knew what was going on. So they went opposite directions.
What?
Right. So like, that's how you would do a good heist, right?
Yeah.
So they're, and I'm not saying they're doing anything bad. I'm saying that people are sensitive. Everybody's starting to build their own web.
I swear some of that world, Ben, is so much like winking at your opponent and going, I see that you see me, now watch this.
Exactly. Like we're talking about with the conversations with Uncle Xi and Joe Biden. When you're in a conversation where both people know that they're lying about something and they both know that the other person is lying, then what they talk about actually ends up being very close to the truth.
Interesting.
It's weird. I think it's somewhat unnecessary, but there are all kinds of reasons we don't run world governments.
I don't know that I've ever experienced that. Do you guys, have you been in that situation where you're like having a conversation like that that's clandestine, I guess?
Not to that degree, certainly. I mean, I don't know what, maybe Ben's more likely to have moved in some of these circles, yeah. But are you talking about like sort of saying the loud part quiet, like just like a veiled in kind of jargony kind of stuff?
Think of all the, you see it all the time in fiction, yeah. Right? Like one thing that epitomizes a great crime thriller is when you have that dramatic irony of like, you know what? A great example, De Niro and Pacino in Heat.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In that dinner time conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're a little more honest about it at that point.
Well, I guess maybe one version of it too that I'm thinking is sort of like mafia phone calls when they know they're being tapped.
Yes, that's
stuff like
that's a perfect example.
Okay.
Yeah, Middle Kingdom court intrigue,
yes.
In ancient China.
I got you. That makes more sense. Because I'm thinking about like speaking in code and those kind of things. I'm trying to imagine that thing where people are having that very serious conversation, like in a diplomatic moment.
Mm-hmm.
When they're discussing those two satellites that you described,
yeah.
Going off in two different ways, and some U.S. official was just across the table like, I noticed your satellites had an interesting trajectory.
We're grateful for our country's continued cooperation and partnership in space. Would be a valid response.
You're right.
And it's kind of like, you know, our hearts always go out to the poor scientists doing the actual science who are usually friends.
Yeah.
Because they're the only people they know who are so into their very niche, rarefied activities, and they have to hope their parents let them play together, which is a weird way to put it.
Yeah.
And with this strange Joseph Heller catch-22-esque kind of situation in space and on the surface, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back with a possible conspiracy within a conspiracy.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. The Zumba Lodge, not Zumba. I forgot what Zumba is.
Not Zune. Remember that Zune, short-lived MP3 player?
Yes, yeah. Or Zoom, that short-lived video conference. I'm just joking.
No,
I'm just joking.
Still
I'm just joking. Yeah.
Or that excellent ad jingle. Was it Volkswagen?
Zoom.
Zoom,
bitch.
Zoom.
Wow.
Zoom. Well, what a creepy child whispering, zoom. You remember that?
We're talking instead about Zumba.
Zumba, not Zumba. Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
And that was the same kid from Taste the Rainbow.
Oh, boy, was it ever. I see dead people.
That kid made me so uncomfortable.
Guys, yeah. Let's talk about this is the most intriguing accident that I have seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all drive on 285 regularly. we see a lot of accidents, but not many compared to Zumba. So Zumba is the street name for USA 280. It was launched by SpaceX on January 8th, 2018, or SpaceX launched something on that day. Here's the conspiracy, the most interesting conspiracy surrounding the Zumba launch. So our big problem, if we are space spies, is that everyone will know when we launch something. No matter what we do, everybody will see it because we can't make it invisible.
But they'll just know we launched something.
They'll just know we launched something. So we can try to bury it under paperwork and stuff.
Well, you know, when we launch like a new spacecraft or like a SpaceX thing, it's a big televisual event. Not so with spy satellites, right? Well,
sometimes it still is because the payload is
that's
hidden.
What they can classify. That's what they can hide. They can't hide the rocket, but they can hide stuff in the trunk is the best way to put it. And that's what X-37B literally does. But so here's the conspiracy. What if instead of just trying to hide stuff in the trunk and knowing that people will know when we launch something, what if we fake a failed launch? What if we fake the death of a satellite?
So it's like a
interesting. Wow.
So you get something up there, you put out that to all of your enemies and allies alike that you failed. So you've got an actual secret spy satellite.
And perhaps small enough to be confused with debris.
Whoa.
Or you could hide it aboard one of those larger profile experimental launches.
Parasite satellite?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all the time.
Why not just call it a parasatellite, by the way?
Oh.
I mean, if we're coining new terms here, sure. Guys.
Yeah.
Wait, is that, you think that's a real thing?
I think it has
absolutely
to be.
Is a real thing.
Yes. Wow. It would be in their best interest. Yes, of course.
Because what you can have is like a component inside a larger satellite that has the capability to deploy that thing later.
Yeah. dude, maybe that's what the NSA thing was doing that we were just talking about, going around planting little parasites on the satellites.
And maybe this is a silly question, but how physically large are we talking here compared to, say, a space shuttle or a space station? They're quite small.
They have a lot of variance in size.
More like a drone?
Nowadays, they're going to be smaller. Okay. Nowadays, they're going to be smaller.
The best example I can give you from the one we just talked about that fell to the Earth. That one was, I would estimate
the ERS 2.
I would estimate that was the size of, gosh, imagine a 16 wheeler, one of these big trucks, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Imagine you cut that thing in half, mm-hmm. and then put those two halves next to each other. So they're in line. Does that make sense? So yeah. The width of those two trucks and then the length of half of those two trucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's roughly the size of
that's pretty big.
That is quite
it's
big.
Huge. It was huge.
So when I say a drone, too, by the way, I'm not talking about like a personal, commercially available drone. I mean like those big military.
You mean
drones,
like a UAV,
right? But those are still smaller than two giant
like
trucks.
A Reaper. Yeah, mm-hmm. But
this is very helpful for some.
Well, also there's tremendous economic design pressure to make them as small as possible.
Yes, and that one I just described, the size is significantly older, which means, mm-hmm. As you said, Ben, as we're getting further and further advanced, they're getting smaller.
So, okay, so here's what happens. The official story. We know the NRO is in charge of Zuma, the satellite, and the Zuma launch, but we don't know what it was doing. However, if you're playing along at home, let's just diplomatically point out the name of the NRO is the National Reconnaissance Office. So you can make some guesses. You make a couple guesses. You know what I mean? They're not there to steal cable or watch NHK for free.
Dude, no.
But although I would love that, because that would be a terrible plan.
Yeah. Okay, so the official story, did we talk about that yet? What officially happened according to the sources?
Okay, so it launches.
Yeah.
But then the satellite deployment fails, right?
Yeah, and at least initially, it was stated that the satellite just fell back to Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the story started changing from all the different outfits that were in charge of the launch itself and who created the mm-hmm. assets. Is this the one that Northrop Grumman created?
Northrop Grumman.
Yep, yep.
So, like, Northrop's given a different story. Mm-hmm. The NRO is just like, it didn't work. And then somebody else was given another story.
And there were a lot of unnamed official sources in the mix, which should always be a red flag, right?
Yeah.
Because that means that they got greenlit to say something and they don't want anybody to be accountable for what was being said.
Because it's probably disinformation.
Or I don't know. It could be a couple things, but none of them are very upfront or transparent. And also it's interesting because there are like three main players. So there's SpaceX, Northrop Grumman, and the NRO. NRO, famously not a talkative group. They're somewhat taciturn.
And this is right before Space Force.
Right before Space Force.
And SpaceX famously loudmouthed.
SpaceX all over the place.
At least in terms of their leadership.
And because those are both private-ish industry players, SpaceX...
You say ish because there's subsidies.
SpaceX and Northrop Grumman both want to put it out in the public that they didn't do anything wrong. They held up their part of the thing. SpaceX is like, the launch was normal. We're good at this. We know what we're doing. And Northrop Grumman's like, we built it the way we were told to. We're good at this. We know what we're doing.
Give us more government contracts, please.
Three Spider-Men pointing at each other.
Exactly. But it really was the SpaceX, they used the term nominally functioned nominally.
Yeah.
And
what does that mean? Sort of as expected?
Well,
not great, but like sort of predictably.
Not super positively surprising.
That's sort of, yes.
But did what we thought it was designed to do.
I think of nominally as being sort of a disclaimer almost, right?
Nominally is mids.
Yeah, kind of mids. Thank you.
So what that means is SpaceX's rocket shot up in, through the atmosphere to its intended altitude. And along the way, it separated from the rocket parts that have the mm-hmm. fuel in it that were boosting it up, the boosters.
Right, right.
Then once it got to the correct altitude, it allowed whatever is attached to it in its payload to detach from mm-hmm. the main part of the rocket. And then in 2018, is this when the rockets are returning to the Earth at this point? Or
trying to make the reusable rockets, yeah.
I just can't remember if that's right in that window when the reusable rockets were happening or right before. But either way, SpaceX is saying all of those steps occurred correctly.
Right. Yeah. And so what's happening here is that everybody involved is saying, this is not on us.
Yeah. Well, because it was billions of dollars, right? Or a couple. It was a lot of money.
It was a lot. You're right, Matt. The reusable piece of SpaceX and Falcon 9 was already in play. I think that was like 2011 or so.
Okay, wow. So yeah, they're saying everything's fine. And it was exactly $1 billion, or at least according to ABC News.
So,
and it just burned up in the atmosphere, according to the official story.
Yeah, so the NRO is saying, you guys ask a lot of questions. It's like every time with you people, just move on, okay, and trust us. Peace through security and spying. And the odds are right now that Zuma probably did crash. We're not saying that out of some conspiratorial or skeptical bent. It's more that observers would be able to see some new addition to the sky.
Unless it's designed to not be seen, Ben.
But if it's designed to not be seen, then people would have already launched invisible satellites.
Well, what if this is the one, man? This is the stealth satellite. They made stealth everything else.
Yeah, yeah. We should come up. You know, they're doing new flavors of Coca-Cola. And
yeah. Did you see our buddy Alex?
That made me think of that.
What's the word? The testimonial video?
Yeah.
Spicy raspberry or Coca-Cola something weird like
spice,
that?
Yeah. I tried Coca-Cola Dream, and it was just gross. And, you know, to be fair, they never said it was a good dream. So that's what I get. But like, what if we had, here's my pitch, Coca-Cola Stealth.
Yeah. Ooh, what is that?
I don't want to overthink
it yet. Clear Coca-Cola. It's invisible.
There it is.
Yeah. It just looks like clear water. Can.
It's an empty bottle. There's nothing in it.
But hey, I noticed you've been drinking a lot more water lately. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben is literally taking a sip from a box of drinking water called
boxed water.
Yeah. It's better, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. It's that's also in the name. But
I think it's actually the full like logo.
That is. So. Yeah, they've got a little, that's a drop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. Or a butt plug. But the, I just wanted to see that spicy face. No,
yeah,
that's not.
It's too sharp, I think.
That's drinking from a can labeled as high explosives, it would
C4,
appear.
C4, yeah.
Yeah, C4 Energy Midnight Cherry.
Oh, boy. What makes it midnight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird when people throw midnight in those things.
Exactly.
But speaking of, that's still not the sketchiest satellite. I suggest we spend a little bit of time on something our longtime conspiracy realist will enjoy. Something we talked about off air for many years. We did a video on this in our YouTube days. Black Knight satellite. What if the one most important spy satellite up there isn't man-made at all?
Well, who would have made it then?
Who would have made? Who indeed?
Well,
the ruse, the kangaroos.
Wait, are we talking about the heat shield that's just floating around in space? I'm just joking. That's not what it is, you guys.
I mean, okay. So the idea is that there's these extraterrestrials got together thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands, or indeed maybe millions of years ago, and they launched the satellite to Earth, and it's been hanging out there in like a near polar orbit for 12 to 13,000 years now. And for one reason or another, absolutely everybody who can get into space, despite their differences, has cooperated to cover it up. Yeah.
Pensive out-breath.
I mean, look, there is a documentary. I cannot remember the name of the gentleman that hosts this documentary, but I was watching a clip of it the other day, and I think I sent it to you guys. I was like, we gotta talk about Black Knight again, because there's an entire documentary on about this concept that you're describing, Ben, that potentially some civilization at some point parked this thing up there as a way to monitor what's going on Earth.
To signal to Oumuamua or whatever.
In combination with whatever other technology we don't yet know about.
Sure.
Over a time scale that we cannot fathom.
Right.
And it's just been that way forever. Which gets my wheels turning. I think you guys probably too. Like, when you conceptualize the possibilities there, it's exciting.
Yeah. It is.
But it's probably not true.
It's probably, well, yeah, what is the truth, as the NRO would say.
We are living in a post-truth society, my friends.
So this is an example of modern folklore. Like, oh, it's been there for 13,000 years. Someone comes out and says, oh, and there are photos of it. Oh, and also it's related to whatever my previous pet conspiracy theory was.
So this is like in the same vein as Ancient Aliens type stuff.
This is telephone game Ancient Aliens. Yeah, because people kept threading together the basic concept with pre-existing unrelated stories and then adding their own thing on the way. What we do know is the big moment for the true believers occurs in, ISS. It was the STS-88, the first shuttle mission to the ISS. And they published photos. And if you look at the photos, you can see what appears to be a small black object hovering in low Earth orbit above the planet. And then, boom, it went all around the world.
December 1998, by the way.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And the idea was, boom, in one photograph, we proved aliens are real. They visited Earth. They've been interested enough in life to study it. But there is an answer to what it is.
Well, there's six. Yeah, there are six photos of this thing from different angles.
Right.
Which is why what you're getting to right now, Ben, that's why it's so important. This thing, the shape changes as the shuttle is passing by its location, right?
Mm-hmm.
So immediately...
Shape changes.
The shape changes.
Because of the perspective of the photo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
Which means it... But you'd have to look at it. I think one of the reasons they call it Black Knight Satellite, which this is maybe a complete conjuring in my imagination, but there's one photo that I swear it looks like Batman. With the wings
right.
out.
Yeah.
I swear that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
But the other photos, it just looks like this weirdly shaped, kind of curved on one side thing.
It looks like a regular space chunk.
Yeah. Or a piece of a ship that ripped off or something.
It looks like cosmic flotsam, right?
Yeah.
That's because the answer, should you choose to accept it, folks, is that the satellite is indeed man-made. It's a thermal cover, one of four, that was meant to clamp onto a thing to prevent heat loss. So it's like a little jacket for a satellite component.
Cute.
So it can stay cozy. Yeah.
And also appear dapper.
Yeah. And they couldn't. The thing is, on the spacewalk, spacewalks are amazing and terrifying and pretty difficult. It's a high-stress situation. So one of these four thermal covers got away, and you can see the video of when it goes wrong. It's online. It's just not as popular as the alien satellite videos.
I have not seen this video, Ben.
You can see it. You can see it, courtesy of our friends at space.com. They link to it. And then you can also hear the commander of the STS-88 mission saying, hey, I think one of those thermal covers got away from you, bud. And then they watch it go away. But again, they can't. It's not like, you know, when you have a piece of paper blow away on a sidewalk, you can't turn around and run after it. So they have to kind of like watch it go into space.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Very slowly reaching.
I'm watching the video right now and I'm trying to find this moment. It looks like, and it's upside down from my point of view. So I'm having to turn my computer. Okay, this looks more normal. It's definitely astronauts working on the outside, and they've got these things you're describing.
Yeah.
But they look way smaller than the size of the object, at least my mind perceives in the photos from STS-88.
Because again, the perspective is so tricky.
Yeah. Right?
Because depending on the distance of the object from the standpoint of the photography, it'll look very big in comparison to Earth or very small.
But because of the resolution of the photographs, and the resolution is pretty high
it's
on
not
the ones
bad.
That exist.
It's not bad.
The resolution of the actual object feels very, it's like blurry, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to just think back through memory, but it does feel way larger because of the focus for some reason.
Yeah. And it's sort of similar, I would say, to the Face on Mars photos. Because of the perspective that gets forced there. It's not a one-to-one comparison. It is a bit apples to bananas.
Mm.
That doesn't make sense either. I just made that up. What I'm saying is it's not a perfect comparison, but but from everything we can find, the Black Knight satellite is or was technically a real thing for a minute until it went into the atmosphere and burned up.
Wait, do we know that that happened?
That appears to be the case. Yes, NASA cataloged it. They call it. It was number 025570, and then because you know it can't adjust its orbit because it's space trash.
Yeah,
its orbit decays rapidly, and a few days later, it hits the atmosphere, burns up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang, I was really excited. I thought it was still up there.
It would have been cooler. It was still up there.
What if it is, man? What if this is another Zuma situation?
Mm-hmm.
What if this thing was a spent panspermia delivery system capsule?
You lost me at panspermia.
So like a space condom?
No, not a prophylactic.
Oh, okay.
What I mean is
different
like...
Different kind of spermia we're talking about.
Like an IVF kind of thing.
Kind of, yeah. It gets to the, like close to the atmosphere, releases its payload, and then it drops in. And then
call it a space load.
Yeah.
So it drops
well,
its space load.
Guys, I propose that we get Adam Duritz and the boys in Counting Crows on the case to recover these satellites.
Recover these space loads. It's true though, because if you just look at the photographs as Matt's describing, it does seem really compelling. At least it seems so unusual that there must be something awry. However, that has been pretty thoroughly debunked. We would, of course, love to hear evidence otherwise. If you've got something, if you think there's something that needs more exploration, please let us know. We got a shout out to X37B. Check out our episodes on that. Here's how I think we have to end, because everybody like us has been consumed with this idea as we were talking off air about this episode and having some very strange conversations about spy satellites that would later become terrifyingly relevant, a weird piece of synchronicity hit. Representative Michael R. Turner, a Republican of Ohio and chairman of the House Intelligence Committee here in the U.S., went on X, FKA Twitter, as Noel likes to say, and claimed Russia had a new space-based nuclear weapon designed to threaten the satellite web of the U.S. But he didn't say that at first. He did the worst thing that the internet does. He did a vague post and he said, hey, Biden administration, I can't say what terrifying thing is happening, but it's true. And you have to declassify it so that we can talk about it to the public, which is such a terror. Like you ever get the text where it's like, call me.
Yeah.
I hate those.
Emergency call.
Oh, God, no. All right, boomer.
Those are just
nobody
terrible.
Calls anybody anymore. It's egregious.
It's like when your bank sends something and they go, we sent something to your email. Check your inbox. And you click on it. It's like, hey, we just want to let you know we're your bank.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Wait, do you guys not FaceTime with anybody? Or like?
Yeah, definitely. That's different, though. And that's something you do with friends that are very close or family members. But you get permission first.
Oh.
You don't just do it sight unseen. That's aggressive.
Nobody would FaceTime.
Oh, well, look, I literally only do it with my kid or someone that I've agreed upon in advance. To send someone an unsolicited FaceTime this day and age, I would argue, is an act of war.
I'm going to try it with Chuck later and just see what happens.
Oh, he'll love that.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm going to do it.
All right, let us know how it works.
I will.
He is a boomer, though.
See,
so
maybe.
He might accept it as an act of love.
Well,
tell him
I
say hi.
No, I'm not quite a boomer.
You're not a boomer. I'm on the cusp. Gen X. No, dude, boomers are old. Boomers are like grew up in the 60s.
In my soul is what I'm talking about.
I see. Well, I'm sad, guys. I didn't know about the wide world of FaceTime.
No. Literally FaceTime with like my kid, and that's about it.
And so current and former officials came out and they said, here's what's really happening. There is reliable, actionable intelligence that Russia is possibly going to violate the open space treaty. the Outer Space Treaty, excuse me. There's open skies, mm-hmm. which Russia already pulled out of, and there's outer space.
Open skies is a thing where we monitor each other's nuclear capabilities, right?
Right. And
Russia doesn't cotton well to being monitored by anybody.
Mm-hmm. No. It's a
called the Iron Curtain for a reason.
They prefer a one-way street when it comes to spying. Mm. And to be honest, most places do. But what they said here, if true, would be terrifying. It's the idea of deploying a nuclear weapon in space. This is, okay, this gets Russia in trouble with the UN, as if they care at this point. But even more importantly, this could be enormously dangerous for everybody on the planet. Yeah.
And this isn't Starfish. This isn't, when we say deploying a nuclear weapon from space, it's not exploding it in space. It's shooting it towards the ground.
Right, right. You know, pick your favorite menu item of disaster. Right, it could pose an existential threat to a huge amount of satellites. If it disables the satellite networks, then boom, back to the Dark Ages. It could deploy onto the surface, in which case we've already seen what happens with a nuclear detonation over a populated area. We also know that just like with shooting any satellite out of the sky or forcibly exploding them, it creates so much debris, and that debris creates so much more debris.
Yeah.
And we get really quickly into a feedback loop that could render space exploration just not feasible.
Yeah. And it's over.
And it's over.
You know what we need up there, guys? We need to build a new HAARP, but in space.
I like it. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know what it would do up there, but we need it.
We don't really know what it did down here.
We really don't.
Exactly. Sent reptilian signals or something like that?
No, sure. The idea is it shoots energy
into the ionosphere.
Into the ionosphere, and then it goes in a trajectory that's like an arc back down to a target, and it can have effects, allegedly.
Allegedly. Check out our video and our episode on HAARP, and if you used to work for HAARP, hit us up. Let us know when you're in town. Let's go get some chicken wings.
That's the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The two A's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there are also other things. Like, we've proven one part of these conspiracy theories is indeed conspiracy fact. World powers do conspire to use space as a spying ground. But the thing is, they pretty much have to, because if they don't, everybody else will. It's keeping up with the Joneses on a macro scale. And since the days of Corona, eyes in the skies have been a non-negotiable part of any military strategy. But then the idea of taking space nuclear means that it's a step further. Deploying weapons that have consequences we as a civilization do not fully comprehend is existential. It's an existential threat. It affects every single living being, regardless of where you live on this planet. And that's the precipice upon which we stand collectively today. It's terrifying stuff.
It really is.
So we're going to end with some MeUndies ads.
Gosh, I still subscribe to MeUndies. You guys know that?
They're quality.
It's good stuff. They last a long time. Mm-hmm. The last pair I got had really cute llamas on them.
I just think MeUndies works because we're talking about such a thoroughly pants-crapping situation.
Absolutely. MeUndies, literally, you can crap right in them. Mm-hmm. They're self-cleaning.
When you crap your pants, crap in MeUndies.
I crapped my pants.
Yes.
Because I'm wearing them. And I just did.
So let us know what you think about this. How much, of course, there are many things we didn't mention. One of those is the threat of defense industries magnifying paranoia and fear because it's good for their bottom line. That's a piece of this, but I think this is also a real conspiracy and a clear and present danger.
Yes. What is the thing we talk about all the time? When there's an election, especially in the United States, but anywhere in any country, when war is like, we're on the precipice of war, war's looming, it's going to happen.
Yep.
The incumbent president generally has a much better chance of continuing or to be reelected.
The devil, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. So wheels within wheels, webs within space, even though this is occurring in a vacuum,
Yeah.
It's not really happening in a vacuum. This is all connected, we posit. We want to hear your thoughts. We can't wait to hear from you. Tell us what's on your mind. We try to be easy to find online.
Oh, we sure do. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, or we exist on Facebook, or we have our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. We also exist at that handle on YouTube, where we're rolling out new video content every week. Absolutely delightful stuff. You can also find us on X, FKA Twitter. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show, however, on Instagram and TikTok, but wait, there's more.
Yes, we have a phone number. Guys, ready?
Yeah.
Call
1-833-STDWYTK.
I love that we're bringing it back.
Oh, good, man.
Felt good. That was deep in my soul.
Ritual and a half, everybody. I hope you did that in your car, too. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. It is a voicemail. Give yourself a cool nickname. And let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you've got more to say than can fit in a 3-minute voicemail message, why not instead shoot us an email?
We read every email we get at conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.